Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, challenging, engaging, meaningful work into your later years. Somewhere in your 20s, maybe your 30s, you might have wrestled with the big questions of life and purpose. What am I meant to do in this world? What's my calling? How do I thrive and give back? How do I pay off all these student loans? Chris Farrell argues in his new book that the urgency of those questions doesn't fade just because you've had 50 or 60 birthdays. Many of us want a purposeful life and meaningful work deep into days when our parents and grandparents might have been thinking about retirement. Chris writes, many experienced workers are ready for new adventures. They're willing to experiment, they're curious, and they want to keep earning a paycheck. As Chris Farrell joins us, we'd like to hear from you. Are you someone who is in search of continued purpose for your later years of work? Maybe you found it. I think that'd be really valuable to hear in the conversation. Maybe you're still seeking. I think we'd like to hear about some of the barriers that you're running into. What do these working years of 55 and above look like for you? So in search of continued purpose for your later work years, you've found it. Call us, 651-227-6000. You're still seeking and you're running into some obstacles. Call us, 800-242-2828. And you have questions about how to infuse these later years of working with purpose. You can get to us on Twitter, at @CarrieNPR. Chris Farrell's new book is titled Purpose in a Paycheck, Finding Meaning, Money, and Happiness in the Second Half of Life. And he's with me in the studio. This is not just academic for you, my friend, right?
No, I'm 65 years old.
And as
put it right out there.
And you began thinking about your career, always kind of rooted in economics and journalism and interest in what's happening with work. But you also began thinking of the evolution of where you wanted to be and what purpose you would infuse those years with, right?
That's right. And we have such a negative view, negative stereotype about aging.
So true.
It's sort of, you know, why don't you just fade away? And when I've been traveling around the country, and as you know, I do that, and I talk to people, and one of the things that always struck me is that people seem to have this image that you go from 60 to 90 in 1 year. Now, there's 30 years. I just want to do the math here for you. There's 30 years there, right? But
right.
It's a sense that once you hit a certain arbitrary age, some people at 60, some people at 65, then, you know, you're no longer creative, you're no longer productive, you no longer have much to contribute, and, you know, it's time to fade away and, you know, barbecue on the patio, whatever it is you want to be doing. And, of course, I'm rebelling against this. And I think there is so much research that says these negative stereotypes are wrong. And then when you look at what people are actually doing, when you look at the numbers in terms of 50 plus, 55 plus, 60 plus, increasing their labor force participation rate over the past 25 years, you say something else is going on, and it's not this negative stereotype.
Do you think there is an economic culture, though, that applies pressure to workers of a certain age that says it is time to shift out of the way and let the next generation step in?
Yes. There is.
And so what do we do about that?
So, I mean, if you think about it, for a lot of companies, and companies that offer their employees retirement savings plans, I mean, there reaches a point where is it time to cash in your 403B, your 401K?
Questions begin coming at you.
Yes,
from
absolutely.
Yeah.
And part of my argument is that what companies need to start doing and actually are starting to do right now is instead of saying, well, how can we have a graceful exit? It's how can we keep you around? Because you have knowledge, you have skill, you have experience. And by the way, we have a low unemployment rate, a relatively tight labor market. And if we want to continue to grow our business and we want to continue to sign these contracts, we can't let these experienced workers out the door. And that is starting to happen. And what is accelerating it is this relatively tight labor market.
Let's go to some calls. But I also want to come back to some of the people who have put this into practice that you were talking to, interviewing for the book. So we'll name some names here and hear about their experiences. But to Jody in Downing. Hey, Jody. Hi. So glad you called.
Hi. Thanks. I'm actually hitting this from a different angle than Chris is talking. I've been self-employed my whole life. Mm-hmm. I'm now 63. And about 8 years ago, my friend and business partner and I started a business working with artisans from around the world. I'd been involved in nonprofit. I was a weaver and just passionate about how to preserve these women's incredible artisan work, specifically textiles. So we have a shop. I have two nonprofits in Guatemala. We travel and meet with different women, primarily women's groups from around the world. I've been in India.
Jody, you're like living the dream here. And I have to say, Jody, what and Chris, I know, picked up on this as well. In your mid-50s, you didn't say, well, I'm going to wind it down now. No, you began thinking about launching a new business, Chris.
And there's a couple things to pick off here. One is entrepreneurship, self-employment, running your own business, nonprofit or for-profit. This is one of the most striking aspects of this whole field of the demographics of aging. A quarter of all new businesses in recent years have been formed by the 55 to 64-year-old age group. When you look at
self... Say that again, because
so
I think
quarter,
this is really kind of counterintuitive.
A quarter of all new businesses in recent years have been formed by the 55 to 64-year-old age group. So when I say entrepreneur, you may think Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook or Jack Dorsey of Twitter. No, it's someone probably with gray hair. All right. And
even if they're covering it up.
And then for self-employment, the highest rate of self-employment is the 65 plus age group.
Why?
So what is happening here is a couple things. It's purpose and a paycheck. So part of it is age discrimination is real. It's out there. And it's very hard to get through the front door human resources once you reach a certain age.
The traditional way.
But you have skill. You have knowledge. You have experience. You can solve a problem, just what Jody is doing. And so you go out and you use your knowledge and use your skill and you create a business. And the other thing is you're engaged in it. It's something that you really believe in. You're passionate. So it has that purpose, but you're also bringing in a paycheck. The other thing I just have to say off of this is the leading edge of everything that I'm writing about are women. So if you look at women, this is the first generation of women who are retiring from careers. Now, women have always worked, but this is the first generation, the baby boom generation of women who are hitting those retirement years that have had careers.
That's interesting.
And in their careers, if you think about all the ups and downs that women have had, right, and a lot of the discrimination, what they've had to do is know how to network. They've had to, throughout their career, not think about their job title, but what is my skill set? And so those two things alone are really valuable in the second half of life. Networking is how you get your jobs. What is my skill set is how you think about what you want to be doing next and what you enjoy doing. And remember, women live on average longer than men.
And by the way, the skill set, and I think we're going to hear this from listeners who are calling in, doesn't necessarily have to be a mirror of what you did in that job. You really begin maybe to think creatively about the skills you've adapted to or created within yourself because the job demanded that.
Right. So one woman that I interviewed, she was had been a school administrator. And what she realized what she was really good at doing was negotiating with people who came from, had different backgrounds and were, schools can be very contentious.
Yeah.
And so she ended up on an economic development organization in Montgomery County because what she was simply doing was taking that skill of negotiating with all these different groups and take it into a different sector of the economy.
So if you're listening to this, start to think about it like that. To the phones to Dee in Hastings. Hi, Dee. Curious to hear about your next career. What'd you do?
Right. I was in long-term care, and I had my own bookstore. And then I went back to school at the age of 56 and became an ordained pastor. And I'm taking all the skills that I learned in business with my business background and bringing it into the church and saying, how can we change things up? How can we make things new? And it's just been just life fulfilling, you know. It's just exciting for me.
This sounds really satisfying, Dee. And at any point, was it, you know, I may only pastor a church or do this kind of work for 20 years. Is it really, is that enough time to make this big transition? Doesn't sound like that held you back.
Hey, no, I thought 12 years, and I'm at 10 now, so, hey, I'm all good. It's all on the upside.
All right.
I'm 70 now, and I do interim work. I go in and shake things up, and it just fits my personality, and it fits everything. I'm just really excited. And talk about learning. I don't even think I'd read through the whole Bible when I started. So, you know, you change things up.
Right. Good to have
you
the call.
Know how they go.
Dee, thank you.
So just to pluck one thing out of this.
Yeah.
There's this image out there. You've heard this expression, you can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Oh, yeah.
And if you look at organizational spending, government spending, organizational spending on training, it's over with by age 40. I mean, there's almost nothing spent on people 40 and over.
Really?
And so, but just think about what she's talking about and all that she's learning. And yes, and the research is compelling. People continue. And we know this, right? I mean, you just think about all the people you know. People continue to learn. Now, a lot of it is they're probably doing something in their garage or they're doing something in their basement and they're being highly creative and they're continuing to advance their skills. Well, they can do this in the work environment. Why is it that they have to do it on their own time as a hobby? Whereas why are management turning to these creative people and saying, hey, you have something to offer here, as opposed to thinking, well, it's probably not worth training this person because, you know, they might leave. She's already been, 10 years? She says she's already been doing this. And it doesn't sound like she's leaving anytime soon. I think she's going to go blow past the 12 years.
Chris, these are what you're describing is happening in companies is kind of well-worn ruts and ways to think about the arc of a career. I guess the question is how many companies are willing to think, you talked to us about the tight labor market, so out of necessity, maybe some, but are enough companies willing to think about this in fresh ways to get to where what you're talking about here?
Well, I wish there were more doing it, and I wish it was happening quicker, but there are some really striking examples. So one area that where you do see is the hospital industry, and the hospital industry has made real changes. And this is an anecdote, but it's an anecdote you can reinforce. 20 years ago, I know a doctor didn't want to be on call anymore, which, you know, it's a fairly typical thing. And basically, goodbye, time for you to retire. Today, you talk to Penny Wheeler at Allina Health. What do you want to work? 0.8? 0.5? What would you like to do? They want to keep people. They want to keep the nurses. They want
leveraging that experience.
Leveraging all the experience. You don't want people to be leaving. There's a fascinating aspect here that's happening in Hollywood. Now, you would not think that Hollywood and older workers is a particularly friendly environment, right? But because of streaming, and the new technology of streaming, there is a huge demand for skilled writers. We're not talking so much about the stars. I'm talking about all the people that are behind, the camera people, the audio people, particularly the writers. And it is a boom business for boomers, pun intended. But it is a boom going on right now because of this new technology called streaming. So when you start looking around, manufacturing is another really fascinating one. Older than average workforce. Now, I don't think there's a whole lot of enlightenment going on here, but what there is you have a lot of workers in your 60s and you have a lot of workers in your 20s, not that many in between. You have to keep those experienced workers around if you want to sign those contracts.
I want to ask you about the company, and I wanted to say it was BMW, one of the companies that has a manufacturing company that has really come back to realize the opportunity here. And has gotten very creative in a field I guess I wouldn't have thought.
You wouldn't have thought it out. So the BMW story is a great story.
Okay,
and when you do your search engine, you can put Harvard Business Review, BMW. It's a really worth reading study. But very quickly what it is, Germany has an older workforce than we do. And so BMW got concerned, what would the workforce of the future look like in terms of productivity? So they created what they called the pensioners line. And it was the workforce of the future. And the initial runs on the pensioner line, productivity was way down. Then what they did is they spent $50,000. Now, what is that? one BMW. Is that, does that even get you one BMW? And they, bigger screens, barbershop chairs, I believe it was bamboo flooring, yoga, meditation. And the productivity of that line now matches the productivity of their other lines. In fact, by certain measurements, the productivity of that line is their most productive line. So again, $50,000 for a company like BMW, which is a 100+ billion revenue company, is nothing.
Chris Farrell's in the studio. If you've just gotten in on the show, we're talking about his new book, Purpose and a Paycheck, Finding Meaning, Money, and Happiness in the Second Half of Life. What are we really talking about here? The idea that the whatever remainder years of your career, let's say 55 and older, don't have to be just marking time and just thinking all about how do I bring in extra cash. I mean, Chris is talking about entrepreneurship, new opportunities, companies getting with the program here, and how you can drive some of that in the way you think about those years of work. So I want to hear your stories this morning. If you're running into some barriers there, you don't really know where to begin. Good questions for Chris. If you have found this, we heard from a minister who got ordained at the age of 60 and at 70 is going strong. Others who are creating companies. Well, I think we'd like to hear your stories to mix that into this conversation. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, wherever you are in the region, and then on Twitter at CarrieMPR, where Eric says, how much of senior entrepreneurship is based in getting Medicare at 65? Interesting. Having transferable good health care is a huge safety net the middle-aged self-employed don't have. Zuckerberg still has his parents' insurance to go back. Not quite yet.
Not quite, I think he's
in his 30s now, but man, breadwinners can't take that risk. So how do we balance that question?
So one thing, he's absolutely right, and the year before Medicare and the year after Medicare, there's a big jump in entrepreneurship. So Medicare, one way of thinking about Medicare, is universal health insurance. And so that risk is less. So people are more willing to take the risk of starting their own business. Mm-hmm. This was the real promise of the Affordable Care Act. And when you look at the gnawing away at the Affordable Care Act, who's really being hurt by this is the 55 to 64-year-old age group. And because that's the age group that, you know, once you hit 55 years old, you know, to some extent, you're a pre-existing condition, right? Mm-hmm. And so
in the insurance agencies.
So, you know, there's some reasons why, you know, the Affordable Care Act really opened up this opportunity for people to have comprehensive health insurance and go off on their own, which I think was good for risk taking in this economy. And it's one of the reasons why, instead of gnawing away at it, I believe we should be improving the Affordable Care Act. That said, it's still striking. Now, what it typically is someone's married, they're getting through a spouse, some health insurance, they're buying it on the open market, even though it's not as generous as it is. So what is really striking, how many people are willing to start their own business, despite being in an age group where that is a genuine concern.
Sylvia says, listening to the show while moving hay to cattle, apply 40 years in corporate PR to the farm, to City Family Conversation Platform, City Farm Conversation Platform about sustainable farming. Sylvia says, hi, Chris. Did you write about Sylvia?
Yes, I did write about Sylvia.
How do I know about Sylvia? Sylvia's farm? Yeah,
Sylvia
Burgos,
yes, and Toftus. And it's wonderful, and it's out in Wisconsin. And yes, she had a grew up in New York City, and then she had a very good career with mostly, you know, public relations and nonprofit
work.
Yeah, she worked
for the school system for a while.
Yep. Yeah. And now they have their 80 head of cattle. And it's a wonderful story. And one of the things that I really like what Sylvia and her husband did is they really planned the economics. And part of what they realized, they were not farmers. So they took advantage of courses to learn more about farming and the costs of farming. And they were able to do the farm without putting their 401k at risk.
There was the key.
And it was, oh, and by the way, when I talk about entrepreneurship and self-employment or what like Sylvia has done, which is just incredible, I'm not talking about taking your 401k and saying, hey, I'm going to drain this 401k and I'm going to put it out there
on
my idea. Most of these businesses that are being started, Sylvia's was a there's more capital involved in that. But most of these businesses being started are fairly small. Your office is the home, or you a low-cost co-sharing workspace, you know, part of an incubator or an accelerator. And so you keep your costs way down. So you're not tapping into retirement savings. You're not taking out a home equity loan. You're using the internet in order to sell into a broader market. But no, and Sylvia and her husband set it up so that it was going to be a break-even operation. It's more than a break-even operation, actually. But I really admire the way they planned, they learned, they ran the numbers, and then they took the risk.
Okay. I retweeted the photo that she also included in the tweet. Thanks, Sylvia. Hey, to Brad in Eden Prairie. Hi, Brad. Sounds like you might be thinking about this.
Right. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Hi, Carrie. So the arc of my career has been about 30 years of marketing in the internet economy, and I'm part of a startup out of Silicon Valley now, but live here locally. And so at 54, I'm pursuing my doctorate in leadership and entrepreneurship and technology, and I'm kind of preparing for that next stage of my career to bring what I've learned to the Internet of Things crowd that's starting to bubble up.
So what do you think you're going to do with this, Brad, this experience and the doctorate?
Well, there are a lot of, you know, decisions that need to take place in leadership around technology, like we've seen, particularly ethical considerations. And, you know, some of the stories out of Silicon Valley are not so great. And it impacts both the bottom line and the culture of the company as well as the wider world. So I'm hoping to bring some of what I've learned about how to wed the two, technology and culture and ethics,
Brad,
in a way that will serve the next generation.
If I might, Brad, I love this because I had a conversation a couple months ago. I can't remember his name, but he wrote a book about being a modern elder.
Chip Conley.
Okay. He went into Airbnb, where he was the voice that we've just heard about. I've got the experience. Want you to do this in a way that benefits from the ethics that I've had to navigate and those kinds of things.
And one of the things, Carrie, is that the research shows. So this is not just, you know, Chris Farrell saying this is the way the world should be. It actually, the research does really show this. And what Brad is doing is that multi-generational teams are your most productive teams. So, and you can see this in all different kinds of levels. So I'll give one level, which is very different from the world Brad is in, which McDonald's in Britain had a study. And it was from Lancaster University, hired some professors. Look at 400 of the McDonald's restaurants. The most productive restaurants were the multi-generational restaurants that had 60 plus and young people. And measured by customer satisfaction. So customer satisfaction was 20% higher. And what they found is that the younger people liked working with the older workers. The older workers liked being around the younger people, and they complemented each other. And we have this conversation that goes on, you know, about the conflict within the generations. And you can kind of hear the, you know, the pounding of the boom, boom, boom. You have four generations in your organization. And it's all about this conflict. And what all the surveys show, and common sense also shows, is that, yes, people have different histories. They have different backgrounds. That's called diversity and inclusion. But they share so many values.
Okay, I want to make sure you're not romanticizing this.
I'm not romanticizing it.
Oh, I look at them as my grandparents.
Oh, no,
and
no,
it's all
no.
just great.
They're bringing skills. They're bringing knowledge. They're bringing, I've seen this, I've done that. But they're each learning from each other. And like Dee was saying, you know, still learning. And I think that's a big part of it, is that they're still learning from each other. And that is really important for organizations.
Cora says, as a 22-year-old student, what I find really exciting in this conversation is that there are lots of people doing awesome career changes and advances later in life. This also changes the way you think at maybe at her age about the arc of the career and the arc of your life. It's not a race just to get to 60 and then think, I'm freed. Now I can do whatever. I think it changes some of the decision making.
Absolutely.
Maybe you're doing in your 30s and 40s and 50s.
Well, she's facing what may be a 60-70 year career.
How's that sound, Cora?
And so what that is actually liberating, because it means you have more time to experiment. You have more time to make some changes.
Exactly.
You have more time to lead the workforce and get additional education. I mean, frankly, the notion that at between ages 18 and 24, you're going to pick up most of the education that's going to last you for the rest of your life if you're talking about a 60-year career.
I don't buy that.
Not at all.
Like that, and that's not how it is.
No. So this is one of the things. The silos are coming down. This image that all of us have, and I think all of us do. You go to school. You work hard. You retire. Say goodbye to your colleagues for the last time. Embrace leisure. Those silos are coming down. And it's a much more complicated picture. I think it's a much more exciting picture. But it's also about more careers, more career shifts, and more education throughout a work career.
To Stephen in Eden Prairie. Hey, Stephen, what are you thinking about on this as you listen in?
Chris, you referenced the difference and this distinction between skills and knowledges. And I think a lot of people are held back because they don't really understand the concept of transferable skills.
Good.
And I think inventory tools like StrengthsFinders or the history inventory from my dad's book, What Colors Your Parachute, can really inform people to think more broadly about what they're capable of doing.
Okay. So Chris, this is a really good note. Talk to us between the kinds of skills that you can transfer into a business or an idea and the knowledge that you've accumulated.
So, you know, a lot of knowledge comes with on the job and you learn how to do something. But a lot of jobs require communication skills, for example, that you're really good at negotiating with different parties. Or, you know, you're a nurse and you are calm in difficult situations in which I probably would not be calm under those particular circumstances, right? But you take that skill set outside. There was one nurse that I was talking to, and she was 60 and she was leaving nursing. She wanted to be outdoors. And what she learned is working with emergency crews. So she was transferring some of her skills, but also getting herself outdoors. But one of the things that I wanted to also follow up on what he's saying, how do you think about your skills? How do you figure out what is your skill set? I mean, how do you get that kind of self-knowledge, that introspection? The most valuable asset anybody 55 and older has is what we now call your network, right? These are former colleagues. These are friends, people at church, temple, second, third, sixth degree of separation. But these are people who know you. And go ask them, what am I good at? What do you think I'm good at? What do you think I should be doing? And call up your former college roommate and say, hey, when I was 20, what did I say I wanted to do? What did I say was the good life? What did I really believe in? What was I passionate about? And tap into your network, because you know what they'll do is they'll come back and say, this is what you are really good at. You are incredible at this. You know, there was one person I was talking to in this organization, and I think it's fine. And you know what I said is she shifted to another nonprofit. And I said, you like to sell. Now, I'm not making any knocks on people in nonprofit organization, but a lot of people in nonprofit organizations don't like to sell. That's not what they like. She loved to sell. That was an incredible skill that so many organizations need. It is that she liked selling. She enjoyed selling. She was a salesperson. And so you take that skill into a different organization, and then you're around different people and a different mission, but you have that skill that gives you that base, that confidence that you can do a good job.
Patricia says on Twitter, I'm 64, recently laid off after 29 years as a corporate controller. I'm looking for my new purpose and finding age an issue. I'm pursuing some contract work. I still have a lot to offer organizations. You said earlier, you know, you're not going to skim over the idea that there is age discrimination.
Age discrimination is real.
It sounds like Patricia's in confronting that.
And she's dealing with it.
Some advice on how to deal with that.
Sure. A couple of things. First of all, the algorithms are going to screen you out, the hiring algorithms, by and large.
Just
the
going
big
through
portals.
The standard HR kind of stuff?
Exactly. Okay. So what you want to use the technology for are things like LinkedIn. I mean, it's a really good resource for finding connections, for finding what jobs that people are doing. You can do a lot of online research about an organization before you go talk to them. So it's good on the information gathering. But as far as going through the human resources department, going through the algorithms, extremely difficult. Most jobs anyway, more than 50% of all jobs come through some kind of a recommendation. it's even higher when you are 55 plus. Wow. And so when I was talking about, you know, turning to your network to say, what would I be good at doing? Mm-hmm. The fact of the matter is your network is what's going to get you your job, because you're not a chronological age. You're a person. You have character. You have skill. You have knowledge. They feel comfortable recommending you. And so it's nurturing that network. It's tapping into that network. So I'm not minimizing it. It's always easy to say, here's what you should do. Transitions are really hard, but your most valuable asset to tap into is that network. Nurture that network. And in the end, that network is going to get you a job.
When I hear you talking about purpose, Chris, I also think about the principles that you've connected with over the course of your career, the things that really matter to you, the kind of truths about yourself and the work environment that you want to be in. And I'm a big fan of John Bogle's. Oh. I think he was a voice of truth in a field, in the financial investment field, in which he was sometimes at odds with where the culture was. Right?
Not sometimes. He was usually
he was
at
usually
odds.
Usually at odds.
And
okay.
And the thing is, he was straightforward. He kept saying, you're charging people way too much. This is outrageous. And he would say it over and over again. And the industry would roll their eyes and, oh, that's John Bogle. But not only did he say it, he came out with products
right.
called index funds, broad-based equity index funds and other kinds of index funds that were low fee. And the industry has finally had to acknowledge that John Bogle was right.
John Bogle had a lot of money because, you know, he headed up a big investment firm. But listen to the way he talked about money and spending and thinking about kind of the course of your working years.
It would be a tragedy if your only objective in this world were to make money. Work itself is valuable. Work itself is fulfilling. How much you get paid is part of the system. How much you spend. One reason I don't care so much about money is that both Eve and I, or my wife and I, really don't like to spend. I don't like to go into stores. I do sneak a sweater at the L.L. Bean catalog every once in a while.
I mean, this is a guy who is multi-millionaire, and yet the truth of his highest principles shone through and guided his work.
Yes.
Right?
And here's the thing. There's a wonderful book by Studs Terkel called Working, published in the early 1970s.
Right.
And Pauline Kael, who was a reviewer for The New Yorker, I think that's the only famous person that's in it. Everyone is. Now, we're back in a different era. Remember, there's secretaries and elevator operators and railroad workers. I mean, ordinary workers. Just read the introduction to that book. And what Terkel says is everybody, what he took away from all these interviews, everybody needs bread. Everybody needs money. They need a paycheck. But everybody, no matter what job it was, they wanted more than a paycheck. They wanted respect.
That's the purpose.
They wanted status. They wanted to be useful. We all want to be useful. We all want to be helpful. And work is a community. These are people that care whether or not you show up, you gossip, you dislike some of those people, you like some of those people. It's a community. And so no matter where you are in our society, purpose and a paycheck runs throughout society. It is not a luxury that only the John Bogles of the world can enjoy or indulge. That desire, that drive runs throughout our society.
And recognize that it doesn't end at 55 or 60. Okay. Call here from Karen in Mendota Heights. Hey, Karen, thanks so much for waiting. What do you want to say to Chris?
Well, I'm excited to speak with both of you. You know, so I am a person who's had kind of a circuitous life where I went from, you know, journalism to law to stay-at-home mom, family crisis manager, and found myself becoming a storyteller because, like with many people who become resilient, I have found purpose in the pain.
Mm-hmm.
And so late in life, you know, north of 50, I've published my first book. I write a monthly or bi-monthly column for the Pioneer Press about finding the better way in and out of life. But what I'm challenged by, and I think others in my situation are, is I'm a content creator. I'm a storyteller. But the business of being an entrepreneur is elusive to me because I didn't work in a business and leave to become an entrepreneur. So I'm curious as to what advice Chris might have for people who are creatives, but who want to make a living, you know, out of their creative endeavors. How do you recommend people go about, you know, building the supports to be
financially successful when they are doing something creative and purposeful and really, as I am, you know, pursuing my passion of sharing lessons.
Yeah. I know, it sounds exciting.
Well, congratulations. Yeah. And as you know, it is not easy. And boy, it is not easy making a living as a writer. So let's just put that right out there.
Chris knows this.
It is very, very hard. One way of thinking about it is artists overall. Now, let's forget the famous artists, the Beyoncés of the world. We're just talking about people who are passionate about their art. They're artists. They're good. People will buy some of their stuff. They create portfolios. And so their portfolio is they're doing their art, but then they teach on the side. Or, you know, they do something that's related to what they do and they create a portfolio of activities. And I would think about joining an ecosystem, a co-sharing workspace that focuses on creative artists or creative types, creative industries, other entrepreneurs. Because one of the things about entrepreneurs that I've learned is entrepreneurs love sharing their information. We think of the entrepreneur as the loner, right? They can't work within an organization. They have to go off on their own and they have to be their own boss. Well, the reality is entrepreneurs are so open with information. This is how I price my product. This is how I do my marketing on LinkedIn. This is how I figured out, you know, they'll share an awful lot of information, even if you're going to be a competitor.
So when you talk about an ecosystem for Karen, you mean what? A gathering place, network of people.
Network of people, you know, there's a number, it used to be called COCO, and I can't remember what the new
like
name.
Like that, though.
Like that.
Got it.
That type of an organization. Some are smaller, some are bigger. But again, you're surrounded by other entrepreneurs and tapping into what they're doing. They may have a project, and you can join a particular project because you have writing skills, and they need a writing skill person for some project. You're not a partner. You're not
That's
an employee.
Good.
So again, these ecosystems can be a rich ground for finding like-minded people and getting some good ideas and at least at a minimum psychic support.
A couple of questions here, Chris, for people who are kind of in the transition planning. TF says on Twitter, how do you plan a transition when you're still in the midst of a pretty demanding job? What suggestions do you have for taking incremental steps? And then I'm going to grab a call that I think may also apply to this. Hey, Eric. Hi.
Hey, guys.
Hi. What did you want to know from Chris? I thought it was similar to what our tweeter wanted to know.
Yeah. Well, and Chris, I did hear you speak over at the U of M just a couple days ago, and you had a great statistic about ages in the country, the 65 and over by 2030 or 35 and 18 and under. So I think listeners would love to hear that stat. But I'm 55, and I've been exploring this for a couple of years, taking classes about what I'm interested in pursuing and just classes about how to pivot. But I'm a bit of a late bloomer. I have daughters that'll be going still into college. I have a aging parent. So my resources, time and money are just such a challenge at this point. And when I've been to workshops and things about this, it kind of seems like a lot of people are beyond that point in their life and have the bit of a nest egg or have just the time and energy.
Eric, that's a really good question.
Yeah.
If you're in the midst of, you've still got some financial obligations, and if you're in the midst of the demanding job life. So what do you do, Chris?
So a couple of things. The number that he mentioned that I said at the talk is Census Bureau, for the first time in U.S. history in 2035, there'll be more 65 and older than 18 and under.
Wow.
For the first time in U.S. history.
Not that far
so
off.
A lot of this conversation in terms of organizations, if you want to be in business, if you want to be an organization that's ongoing, you're going to end up dealing with an older workforce. It's just in the numbers itself. The question is, how quickly do you adjust? So a couple things. I mean, actually what Eric is doing is the right thing. I mean, he's gaining the skills, the knowledge. He's exploring. You know, sometimes the numbers just don't work for you to be making that transition or making that leap. If you have obligations in terms of, say, college education or in terms of taking care of elderly parents. So you may have to delay it for a period of time. But nonetheless, what he's doing is he's planning. And It's hard to plan when you have a full-time job.
Yeah.
It just is. And most people who do this, they have some kind of passion. They have some kind of an idea. They're either taking some extra classes or they're spending time in the evening and on the weekends kind of doing a little, you know, side gig to experiment with, is this going to work? Is this something I really like doing? And I strongly recommend that. The reality is there are 40% of people who retire from a full-time job go back to work within the first 2 years. And the research that shows, and if you go into the data, the expectation is it's for money, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you retired, you realize you didn't have enough. And no, it's actually about purpose. It's about being community. It's about being about people. It's about getting away from your current organization.
I mean, that was exhaustion, right?
Yeah.
That was just needing a break.
And now you've rethought things, and right. now you know what you want to do. So I don't have any, way to kind of wend the way for Eric, except for to say I really admire what he's doing. And so the thing is, when the time comes that his financial obligations will allow him to take the risk, he's going to be really prepared.
So, Chris, what about this network tapping that you've been talking about for our listener who is in the midst of a demanding job? I mean, is that something that you can begin to intentionally build this group of this network that you've got and start having these specific conversations
Absolutely.
About it.
And when I say, I'm not talking about going to these networking events.
I gotcha. That,
this is about
your
individual, and you're thinking about them differently
and
now.
Former colleagues and all that.
Right. And so you're thinking about them differently. And yes, you're reaching out to them. You're having a coffee. You're having a cocktail after work. You're meeting up. You don't have to meet up with the people a whole lot. It's about establishing those contacts, having that conversation. There's some other things that you can do for someone who needs to have health insurance, needs to have an income. They're working in the for-profit sector. They might be thinking about maybe I could shift to the not-for-profit sector. Not because you're not going to work as many hours. You're going to work as many hours for less pay, more than likely. But it's something you really want to do. Well, volunteer at that organization. But now it's not just looking at it as, well, I like the mission and I like the organization. It's, what I want to work here? Mm-hmm. Are these people I want to work for? And then if they are people you want to work for, start asking questions. And if they don't have a job, but they might go, well, we don't have a job here, but actually I know so-and-so is looking for somebody. Why don't you go talk to, I'll make a phone call for you.
Hey, one of the people that you profiled, I thought this was interesting, Joe Anania.
Yes.
Do you remember? Okay. His story was a former employee of Northwest Airlines.
He was a airline mechanic. But early in his life, you know, he raced motorcycles but then he had a family and you got to support your family. And so he became an airline mechanic. And then do you remember the vicious, bitter strike that happened?
Oh yeah, I covered that.
So you covered that.
Yes.
And so he just couldn't go back. And so, he had always been riding motorcycles. And so he created a business that was repairing vintage Japanese motorcycles. He would do some other things, but it was mostly vintage Japanese motorcycles. And if you go to unretirement.fm, it's a series that I did, and I have an interview with him. And what was really striking with me, so we're in it, it's like 30 motorcycles, and they're all stacked all over the place. And my initial reaction was, oh, what a mess. And then you look around and you realize how well organized this is and how neat and how clean. And he was making instruments because some of the tools aren't made anymore and he would make them himself and the parts. And so he had created a career for himself off his passion,
right,
using his skills because he was a mechanic and he knew what he was doing. And as he also had it set up in a way that there were certain things he could do that if he got tired doing it or his body started giving out, there were other things that he continued to do involving motorcycles that he had the skill to do that didn't involve that much physical work.
Let me grab a call from Sandy in Owatonna. Hi, Sandy.
Hello.
Hi, Sandy. Do you have a question for Chris? I'm a little tight on time here.
Yes, I do. I'm actually 55 years old. I have been, I left my career 7 years ago. I have a progressive muscle disease.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am struggling. I was a director of human resources for one of the largest employers in Minnesota. And I loved my job. It was challenging. I loved developing employees, and I was very good at my job. I miss it.
And Sandy, your question for Chris.
Okay, I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
I'm struggling trying to find my way because how do I find a way to practice my passion and try to accommodate my physical restrictions?
Great. Thank
yeah.
You.
So I have no, you know, it's we're on the radio. Here's, you know, while you're talking, here's my suggestion. I know this, it's a lot more difficult than I'm saying, but you know, with human resources, I mean, you know, people, you were involved in a big organization. There's a lot of conferences that happen in the city. And I think there's a lot of small organizations that are being created all the time, a lot of them in the realm of inclusiveness and diversity, which is very important in the human resources. So my guess is that it's tying is consulting, taking advantage of your skills, and tying yourself into a smaller organization that has some flexibility, but wants that skill that you have, because the skill that you have is, you know how big organizations work. You worked in a big organization, right? Those were a lot of the very valuable contracts are. That's where a lot of the contracts come from. So you have a lot to offer. It's so I would be, again, repeating myself here, network, but I'd also go to some of the industry conferences.
The book is called Purpose in a Paycheck, Finding Meaning, Money, and Happiness in the Second Half of Life. Chris, thank you.
Thank you.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet us at @CarrieNPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all our shows by subscribing to this podcast. You can send us your questions or comments by emailing talk@npr.org.